Blog Talk Radio.
Kelly here, and thanks for tuning in this morning. 6:06 and 12th of May. We've got some interesting stories. I've got with you a little bit of what I promised yesterday, which was an expose of this Christian persecution, which was kind of brought up during the conversation yesterday. And I think that it's important that we look into this, and I was talking to a friend of mine last night who's actually been on the show before, and he was kind of warning of, in his opinion, he works in the money markets. He works deep inside the money markets, and he was saying that, in his opinion, the United States is headed down financially. It's going to bring the world into a recession, and on top of that, there's going to be persecution of Christians that's increasing and this type of thing. So it was kind of a bracing conversation from this guy. And he's, according to him, he's doing what he can to, you know, put his him and his family in a position where where they're going to be able to take care of business. But he has even put together something where he's got X number of acres of land so that when everything falls apart, he'll be able to, you know, feed himself. So anyway, I don't know what this guy does, and so I can't have this kind of a dire prediction. We've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Patty.
Hey, what's up?
Hey. Your friend's probably right about the financial collapse. It's looking that way.
Why?
And Walt Rubel, you had him on a couple of weeks ago saying his prediction was it would not fall.
Patty.
Now,
Patty,
we don't need
Patty,
people like
Patty,
that.
Patty, listen. What is your evidence?
What is my evidence?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I call you back? Because I'm right in the middle of doing something. I'll go get it.
Okay,
I'll go get my evidence. I'll call
thanks,
you back
Patty.
In a bit.
I mean, I tend to be skeptical just because, I don't know, I guess I'm just kind of a skeptical person, but prove it to me and I'll believe it. But I need to find out stuff that has some proof, you know, and it's easy to look at the country and say, well, things are not going very well right now, which is, you know, this is true. But on the other hand, I think that it is also important not to, you know, engage in the boy who cried wolf. Because, you know, it's, you know, once you've told people that the end is coming and it doesn't immediately come, people tend to write you off. And the thing is that we want people to take us seriously if we have news. So now, the main thing that he told me that caught my attention was that the dollar is so beaten up that it cannot possibly last much longer. And I think there's some truth to this. If you think about the amount of money that they're printing, which dilutes the rest of the dollars out there, number one, and number two, which is our fiscal policy. And number two, if you think about the amount of money that is in electronic form that was never even printed, it was just taken from, say, the Fed computer and transferred into a computer in some Wall Street firm. It's what they call quantitative easing. And this investment in the stock market is unparalleled. So, all right, so let's get into, and we can do a whole show on the collapse theory, but let me get into a little bit of what's going on with Tom Brady. We had talked yesterday about him getting suspended. Now he's got a 4-game suspension. I predict that he's going to get it reduced to, say, 3 or 2 games because he's going to go in front of the league. And I'm sure that Roger Goodell is going to be able to say, I asked for 4. It was more than Ray Rice got. Yeah, it was reduced to 2, but it's still a significant punishment. And, you know, we need to move on from this. But here is from ESPN. We got a little bleed over here from another clip. So this is Jeff Saturday. He used to be the center. I think he was the center for the Indianapolis Colts. Talking about this suspension. Yes, man. All right, so that's the feeling there, and Tom Brady has been suspended for 4 games, and that's all there is to it. Now, he is going to take it in. He's got 3 days for his, 3 days to appeal this thing, and, you know, when these players get in trouble, they always get the union to help them. They always get some union lawyering or union support, and it's a very powerful antidote to what is, you know, when these guys get in trouble. And a lot of times you see these very serious penalties get reduced. And so I don't know. I mean, 5-2-3-14-50. You might like the guy, but I mean, do you consider him to be a cheater? And I guess maybe it's a moot point now because the league itself has said he's a cheater. And, I mean, are you really going to disagree with their finding? And that basically, you know, that this guy, who Mr. America, Mr. All-America, big smile and everything, the, you know, multi-million dollar wife, a wife that's probably worth more than he is, and this incredible life that they have, and he is the winningest quarterback in the history of the game in terms of percents of wins, something like that. And now we've got him suspended. Do you think it permanently taints his reputation or what? I mean, it cannot possibly help the guy. All right, we will take a break. It is 6:17, and come back and talk a little bit about New Mexico, but I want to get into this story about Christian persecution around the globe. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. We will be right back. It's Kelly here at 6:21, and today is the 12th of May, and we have a couple of calls here. Hold on. This is Kelly. I'll put you on hold. I got another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Patty Riley.
Yeah. Go ahead, Patty.
Okay. Well, it's called We Will Have a Financial Crisis. Okay. I've got a question for you, Kelly. Is $18 trillion sustainable? In debt for us to pay back?
Well, I guess it's never been done before, so.
Well, it's not going to be done because it's not sustainable. We can't do it. For one, we don't have jobs. So a lot of us aren't making any money to pay into the illegal tax system as it is. It's called BRICS, B-R-I-C-K-S. There are several articles out there. I would go to LaRouche Pack. I would go to Forbes. I would go to Newsmax, Hedge Fund, Zero Hedge, and Ron Paul Institute. They talk about the BRICS. And I'm going to tell you, the petrodollar is the only one using the petrodollar right now, which is Saudi Arabian oil controlling our money, is the United is UK and the US. The rest of these countries, the bigger ones, have gone to the BRICS.
Okay.
So there. There's your proof.
All right, okay.
There's your evidence.
Okay.
I hope you all can study that up because there is a collapse coming.
Oh, okay. All right.
And we need to
Patty,
be ready.
Patty, I got another call here, but I'll look into BRICS. Thank you. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show.
Morning, Kelly Rob.
Hey, what's up?
So I hadn't heard of the BRICS. Well, I've heard of it, but I haven't studied it, so I couldn't tell you anything about it. But I know that there's a Chinese and Russian-led coalition to use a currency other than the dollar for their basis of trade.
Yeah, and do you know why that is?
Well, once that happens,
do you know why that is? Don't ignore my question. Why do you know why they're trying to switch over from the dollar?
Because they're tired of carrying our debt.
Yeah, I mean mainly it's.
Hold on.
Let me answer. It is because we are we're so devaluing our currency every day. You know, do you remember when Timothy Geithner said we need to decouple the dollar as the world currency?
Yeah, can you believe that?
That's absolute insanity, but that's what's going to happen. Having everybody carry dollars is like having a bank that is worldwide and there's a branch in every town. That Timothy Geithner suggested that we get rid of that is one of the most suicidal fiscal moves I've ever heard of, and it just proved to me that the guy either doesn't know anything about international finance and the money systems, how these things develop and what sustains them, or he was so deep into this idea of some sort of a world economic system that he didn't care.
Well, when those countries get tired of it and dump their dollars, that's when, you know, get out your wheelbarrow because you're going to need it to carry around enough to buy a loaf of bread.
It's really shocking and it's sad how nobody in the media seems to have any interest in what we're doing to the economic system. It's just tragic.
Yeah, I wonder if the Romans saw themselves collapsing. You know, were there Romans who could read the signs and see what was on the horizon?
Well, I mean, what happened in Rome is that it has stated that it's because the Germans came in and basically overran the country, and that's really not what happened at all. I looked into the top 10 books that I could find on the history of Rome and found that they said the number one problem was tax policy. And what happened is the Roman tax policy created the medieval period, the serfs, because they kept raising taxes to fund their state and fight their wars. The tax rate got so high that these poor people started looking for wealthy people to stay on their land. And then the wealthy landowner would be responsible for the tax for that area. So they couldn't even take it from the individuals. And that's one reason that Rome fell. That's the main reason I read. And then there was the statement by Henry Pirine in Charlemagne and Muhammad, who said that it was because the Muslims came and cut the supply lines for basically world trade at that time and starved off Rome. But I mean, tax policy was the number one thing that I found.
You ever look at a map of Constantinople there near the end, man? They were really surrounded. They were all alone out there. But, you
yeah.
know, that had been decaying for hundreds of years before they reached that point.
So
we don't have hundreds of years, I don't think.
Well, things are happening a lot faster. All right, Rob, anything else?
No, have a great one.
Thanks a lot. All right, folks. Yeah, I mean, I used to do an economics column for this guy, Walter Diamond, who was an absolute genius. But anyway, and he was the first head of the United Nations International Tax, whatever you call it, department. He was a smart guy. He was not a liberal, though, not at all. All right, so we got a little bit of local news here for you. Shooting at Senior Living Center in Las Cruces leaves one dead. This is an incredible story. 89-year-old man was shot dead by Las Cruces police officers at a senior living center Monday after he shot his 65-year-old son, who later died. It was at the Village at North Rise on 2880 North Roadrunner Parkway. The man shot his son in the chest, and the son was pronounced dead at Mountain View Regional. And the 89-year-old was transported to University Medical Center in El Paso with a gunshot wound to his hand. So his injuries are not life-threatening. There was an altercation in the apartment between the father and son, and the father pulled out a gun. So it's pretty sad. A female neighbor heard the commotion, and she was taken hostage by the suspect. And then staff at the center called 911. Police were dispatched. Police arrived at the second floor hallway. The armed suspect assaulted officers. One officer fired and left, fired at least one round and struck the suspect in the hand. They went inside and found the 65-year-old son there suffering from the gunshot wound to his lower chest. So I'm sure there's more to the story, but that's pretty sad. I mean, to kill your own child. Anyway, all right, so I'm going to come back and see if there's a couple more stories out, New Mexico stories, one of which is we're looking to create a corridor for nuclear waste and near Carlsbad. So I think I'll hold this story over till tomorrow because I got Walt Rubel coming in, and that's a pretty long story. Now, a little more news. Terrorist convicted of murdering New Mexico soldier was released. I'll tell you about that tomorrow. Two people were shot and killed during a police chase from Colorado to Shiprock in what they think was a murder-suicide. There was a pursuit that started in Colorado, I think Cortez, Colorado, and ended in Shiprock. And so the police were chasing these guys. And the incident started right before 11 a.m. Yesterday. Police got a call. Someone had stolen gas from Cortez, Colorado gas station and left. And so the Montezuma County Sheriff's Office began a pursuit of these guys. And it turned out to be a man and a woman. Multiple shots were fired from the suspect's vehicle. No shots were fired by the Montezuma County deputies, which is a show of rare restraint. And so law enforcement authorities were informed that the car of a German couple who were vacationing there was hit by shots fired from the suspect vehicle. All right. So when they finally got up to the car, there were two people that were dead inside, and they think it was a murder-suicide, and that was right out of Shiprock. So it's a pretty interesting story. All right, let's take a break here, 6:31, and we will be back to talk about Christian persecution around the world. It's Kelly here. You know, I'm just reading some economic news, speaking of which, and I'm wondering, to what extent do people in the United States hold this administration responsible for the last, say, six years of economic underperformance? And number one, do they hold the government responsible for that? A related question is, do they feel like we could be doing better if the U.S. government pro-business policies? I'm just curious what people think, because usually there's a lot of dissatisfaction and anger at a bad economy, but it seems like people are putting up with this one. All right, here is the question. Is Christian persecution reaching biblical proportions? And this, this is a part of a longer piece, and I want to cut to another one, Christian Persecution by ISIS. All right, take a little break here and come back to this, but I want you to remember a couple of things that I have told you, I think, since the beginning when ISIS showed up, is ISIS, from my extensive reading in Sharia law, and I've written 8 or 10 articles involving Sharia law, published them, I should say. There is nothing that they do that is not part of Sharia law. For example, if you are in a war, you're allowed, because of the law of bounty, you can go and take anything that you want from your opponent, including anything they own, including their wife, their daughter, anything like that. And you have the right to, and this is typically the way that a Muslim war is waged. The men would be killed, any men that would be taken into custody, or you know, anybody that wasn't shot or killed in the war itself could be executed for being an enemy combatant, and then you would take the women in as a wife or a concubine, which is a sexual slave. Then you enslave the children and raise them as Muslims. So there's nothing that they do that is outside of the scope of their beliefs, if you can imagine that. And my friend and I were talking last night, why aren't more Christians in this country outraged at the number of killings that have just swept across the Middle East? And why don't we feel like it's our duty? I mean, if the president is a Christian, as he claims, why isn't he moving heaven and earth to protect Christians over in the Middle East? And you might say, well, you're not supposed to mix religion and government. Is that really, I mean, even if you believe that, is that really a logical conclusion? You can't mix religion and government, therefore we can't go protect Christians in the Middle East that are getting killed because of their religion? That's crazy. We'll take a break right here, 6:41, and going to have Walt Rubel in a few minutes. It is the 12th of May, and we'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. It's Kelly here at 6:44. You know, I don't know what Obama believes, but I don't personally find him I don't find anything that the guy does to be redolent or reminiscent or of the kind of thing that a Christian would do or say or be or react. I don't find anything about him to resonate as a Christian. I have no idea what he believes. He says he's a Christian. He never goes to church. So maybe he's got his private faith or whatever. Maybe he goes into his room and reads the Bible every morning, but I've never heard him talk about that. But the thing that I notice is that when religion comes up, he doesn't seem to get excited to the least extent about Christianity, but he does seem to get enthusiastic about Islam for whatever reason. All right. Here is a little bit more on the Christian persecution. How touching. Direct descent from the prophet. 649 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. We'll be back and taking a little bit more of this interview with this this guy. Talking about Christian persecution globally, but really in the Middle East. We'll be right back. Yeah, it's Kelly here, and talking to my friend last night, and we were kind of going over how crazy it was that we've got this most powerful nation in history, and we are self-identified Christians, and we're not doing anything about all of these tens of thousands of Christians that are getting murdered over in the Middle East, and not only not doing anything about it, but there is something about this leader that we've got that tends to make every decision into this epic, you know, this most incredible decision in history. It's, you know, no mistakes are ever made, but is it not going to be looked back and seen as a mistake that we didn't wipe out the ISIS when we could have, and we had every legal and moral duty to do so? Don't forget when Muhammad tried to persuade various people groups, the Jews, the Christians, the Muslims the Arabs in Mecca, that he was the prophet. When those people refused to accept that, he went back to Medina, the city of refuge, took all the Jewish men, put them together, and cut all their heads off. That's one of the first acts that he did. So let's not call this a religion of peace. I mean, when did Jesus line up a bunch of people and have their heads cut off because they didn't believe in him, you know? He said, I could get, you know, these squadrons of angels down to defend me, but I'm not going to do that. All right, so here's a little more from this clip. On that issue, the longest that a Muslim leader being led by Allah is allowed to enter into a peace treaty is 10 years. After that, ipso facto, the treaty is dissolved. And if at any time it is beneficial to the Muslims to violate the treaty, they not only can they do so, but they must do so. Now, this is Sharia law. If you sat down and read through this stuff, your jaw would drop so many times. Here's the thing that... No, I'm not talking about you. Thing is... All right, but if that's true, are we doing what we can do? We don't want to send people to our... I mean, the stronger that ISIS has is... Did you know Sandy Davis Jr. He was a charming guy. I mean, he was. Good morning, it's Kelly, and got Walt Rubel here, 7:06. It is the 12th of May. It's real pleasant out there, and we're just off air having a debate over whether Sammy Davis Jr. could be in the Church of Satan. So,
you and Mike were really having the debate.
Yeah,
I'm open to the idea. Like I said, he took a lot of drugs.
He took an awful lot of drugs, and people do crazy things.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right, I'm just going to play this clip here. I want to pick Walt's brain on a couple of things, but here is a clip from Sammy Gate, question and answer, Sammy Davis Jr. in the Church of Satan.
Yeah.
All right, so and Mike who is reads his scripture through the eyes of Albert Pike, who is also a Luciferian. But anyway, there's Mike and his dogs. Walt, you may not have any comment on the Sammy Davis Satan.
Well, the thing that was interesting there to me there was the Nixon reference. I mean, remember him and Elvis Presley in that famous photo?
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of people back then who were taking a lot of drugs.
And James Brown was a booster of James Brown was a very serious conservative, according to his own lights. And it was a friend of Nixon, but James Brown literally danced his way up from the bottom. James Brown, I read somewhere that he didn't have a pair of underwear until he was like 12.
Is that right?
He was raised
is that poor.
Parent, you know, it's like North Carolina or whatever. His parents got together and had him, and then the dad ended up leaving, and he was raised by his grandparents in total poverty.
Yeah.
And I think he made his clothes out of like sacks, you know, like potato sacks or whatever. But anyway, so.
Well, they talk about a starving artist, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it takes. I don't know. But he was brilliant.
He was absolutely, brilliant. Yeah. To me, more brilliant than Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson was kind of.
Me too.
Took his stuff from him to a certain extent. But anyway, Walt, how you doing today?
Doing good. Beautiful day out.
All right. So what can you tell us about this shooting? Bizarre shooting.
Yeah.
A guy who's basically 90 years old kills his 65-year-old son. That's one of the most tragic things I've ever heard.
It is. And, you know, what I can tell you what we had in the paper, and that's really all we know at this point. They got in an argument. We don't know what about. At some point, a woman who lived in that facility got involved. She was taken hostage. She wasn't really hurt. Police ended up shooting the older man who had shot his son. They ended up shooting him in the hand, I believe. You know, the son is dead. The older guy will be fine. I mean, the police, the shooting of him will not be fatal or doesn't appear to be serious at all.
I wonder if it'll affect his draw.
I think his drawing days are over.
Well, you know,
I
just can't imagine. I mean, I know that there's family disputes and everything, but just what is the argument that you have when you're 90 in which you feel like you need to kill your child?
Right. Yeah. I can't even imagine either. And right now we don't know. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So how are things around the city in your opinion?
Well, interesting. I mean, I think the zoning decisions recently stirred up a lot of interest, Walmart especially, and then they came back later with A Mountain. And that one, to me, was a little bit easier for us to take a position on, at least, because this was land that originally was government land. The people who own it now got it at a very discounted price. It is, you know, right across from Centennial High School, and so you have to think that at some point in time, something is going to be done with that land.
So you think it's okay for the city or the county that we develop that?
Well, we took a position against it. And I think that's the right position for
now. How come?
Well, because of so many people who live there who said that's what we wanted.
Okay.
You know, I mean, normally you say, well, we want to put stores in because people who live in the neighborhood need the stores and want the stores. Well, almost unanimously, everybody in that neighborhood said, no, we're willing to drive. We moved here because it doesn't have stores. And please don't spoil that. Like I said, putting Centennial right next door, to me, that whole area eventually is going to get developed. I think it's probably unfortunate, and I think, you know, they're going to fight it for as long as they can. But, you know, I just think that's the way the tide is moving.
So what do you think A Mountain represents to the people of the county?
Yeah, very, very good question. You know, different things for different people. Certainly for, you know, the people of Tortugas, it has a religious significance that they feel very strongly about. You know, for most people, it's just something that's, you know, kind of right on the edge of town where you can feel like you're out in the wilderness. You don't have to drive all that far. You know, I think that's the big thing.
And so it's got a little scientific, you know, right? It's got isn't there something up there on top that is, you know.
The observatory, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And have you ever done the walk up there?
I haven't. Yeah. We cover it every year. It looks fascinating to me, but no, I haven't done it.
And but it is also a religious thing. And I wonder how long it takes to – I've never done it. I probably should have, but I wonder how long it takes to get up to the top for a hiker.
I don't know. I think a couple hours, but I don't know. The other one that I know you and I are, I think, on different sides on, we talked about a little bit off air, was the Walmart one.
No, I actually – I mean – All right, look, I shop at Walmart, so let me, I don't want to be a hypocrite about this.
And I do too. I'll lay that out there. So, you know, I mean, and for people who decide that they don't want to, I don't think that's a snooty decision. I think that's fine for at Walmart.
Yeah.
And I don't shop exclusively at Walmart, but I do shop at Walmart.
But I think that, I mean, I'm kind of, I used to be just a vociferous defender of Walmart under the theory of, you know, the freedom of the market,
right,
and, you know, getting stuff to people more cheaply. But something that is, and this is, has nothing to do with the people that work there, there's something that's somewhat disturbing about Walmart. And I can't really necessarily put my finger on it. But
do you think it's the size? I mean, just the enormity?
Yeah,
of?
The gross. I mean, it's like going to Ellis Island.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I, at one time when I, this is in the old days when I used to do the show with Phil, I mentioned that I had gone to Walmart. It was late. And I saw these people unpacking stuff from these pallets. And I said they were like zombies. They just looked like they were dead. They weren't smiling.
Yeah.
And I got an angry phone call on the break telling me I didn't know what I was talking about. And I'm like, well, I mean, I was just in the store last night. Yeah. I'm just giving my observation. I'm not trying to make a scientific statement about Walmart.
Right.
Just
you saw what you saw and you said it on the air. And so, yeah.
Yeah. And I made a joke that people who work there, that they have to take a DNA sample to clone you so they can double your production. Man, I was just joking, but the guy was upset and everything.
Well,
I mean,
and they did famously have that photo that went out last year at Christmas where they were asking employees to donate food and gifts and other things for other employees because they were so poorly paid. And so, you know, that.
Well, here's the thing. I think Sam Walton was kind of a traditional American Christian, or he was out of that ilk.
Yeah.
And I think that he was more into how his employees were treated. And I think the family took, you know, these billions of dollars, and they've become these generational liberals from what I've seen from their advocacy and their donations and stuff. But it strikes me that the spirit of Walmart has changed since Sam Walton died.
It may be so. But the question, you know, locally is, does the government come in and through the zoning process say, nope, you know, we've got three, we don't need a fourth.
All right, so what do you think about that?
I think it's wrong. I think it's an abuse of the zoning process. The zoning process is to say a retail establishment, whatever that retail establishment fits on this property or it doesn't. And when you look at that area, Valley and Tashiro, that's not going to be farmland much. It's not farmland now. It's already going residential. They're going to need, that is an area that is going to need stores. They are going to need services. And it's only a matter of time before a store comes in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so using the zoning process to say, well, Walmart can't come in. As long as it's Walmart who wants to come in, we're not going to change the zoning. Anybody else? And that's my opinion.
Well,
I mean, the city council didn't say anybody else. But I think if you look at it, that's what they're saying.
Well, and I think people will be heartened. Some people have criticized you for being liberal. And people will be heartened that you're buying into the process and that you're saying, you know, we've got these. Basically, what I hear you saying is there's property rights out there.
Absolutely, there's. But it's a balance. I mean, that's the thing, is it's always a balance. And people go into the county because they want fewer restrictions that are in the city. But that doesn't mean that your neighbors have no rights at all.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, okay. So talking to Walt Rubel. And I've got, I want to get into your brain on this ISIS thing.
Yeah, good, because I was listening coming in. Yeah.
And, okay, so we'll take a little break here, 717 with Walt Rubel, who's always, he's always a good, I guess, conversationalist or interlocutor.
Ooh,
is that how you pronounce that?
Word.
Yeah,
I think
word.
That's right. Yeah, you got that right.
All right, we'll be back. Kelly O'Connell, 717-523-1450. Don't be afraid to take on the newspaper. Don't be afraid. We'll be right back. It's Kelly here, and I've got to Walt Rubel in the studio from the Sun News. And I wanted to ask, Walt, you're hearing this stuff about persecution of Christians in the Middle East. We know that it's going on in general. And, you know, obviously we don't know to what extent because we're not over there, and the news is filtered out of the Middle East a little bit differently. But first of all, I'm sure obviously you are totally opposed to any person being killed that's an innocent individual. But do you have any reaction to the idea? You know, we're a Christian culture.
Sure.
We got all these people that are being killed by Muslims for their Christian beliefs. What, how do you react when you hear that?
I think just as you said originally, with you know, horror, disgust. The question is always, what do you do about it?
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I was listening to your show coming in. We talked off air. To me, everybody says very casually, including the president, to destroy ISIS. Everybody who's going to be running for president next year will say, with a possible exception of Bernie Sanders, will say, we have to destroy ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be very easy. I think if we really wanted to do that, it would have been done by now, and it would have been done in a matter of weeks, the same way we were able to take out Saddam Hussein in a matter of weeks.
Isn't that a damning statement, though? We could have wiped him out in a couple of weeks and saved all of the suffering?
Because of Part B.
All right.
Because we wouldn't have saved all the suffering. There would still be suffering. If we would have where I was going with that is taking out the leader is easy. We proved that with Saddam Hussein. Taking him out was easy. It really was. Our losses, the time it took us to do that, were relatively minor. The hard part, as we should have learned, is what comes next. What we did with Saddam, essentially, is we took out a Sunni leader and we replaced him with a Shia leader who immediately forged an alliance with Iran, which gave rise to ISIS, which are Sunnis who are rising up against the new Shia leadership. So now we're going to take out the Shia and put the Sunni back in charge? And how long are we going to keep doing that?
All right. Here is the argument that ISIS is unique and it's evil.
Because they behead people on videos? I mean, let's be honest. Is that why? I mean,
stated by various people, including at the highest ranks of the United States government, that they appear to be kind of like radical Islam on steroids.
That's right. That has been stated. I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, there are a couple of differences. One is the social media aspect, and the other is their intent to take and hold land. I mean, Al-Qaeda never had any interest in forming a government. These guys do. They want to form a caliphate. And my point is that our first Iraq war helped them greatly in achieving mm-hmm. that cause.
That may be true.
And so what have we learned from that?
Well, all right. Let's say we didn't learn anything other than that we shouldn't have done that. But now the genie is out of the bottle. I don't see the harm in going in and blowing him to smithereens.
Well, as I said, what comes next?
According to you, a new ISIS that we then blow up.
Well, I think what George Bush tried to do was right. He tried to form a coalition government. He tried to bring both sides in.
The problem with that situation was he was receiving so much criticism. It was sustained. It was deep. It was broad that he basically had to cut his losses, in my opinion.
Maybe so. I mean, no question about the criticism. But I would argue that the problem is that it was an impossible task, that these, you know, two sides have been warring for centuries. The idea that we, you know, the mighty arrogant United States is going to come in and solve that, I think is a little bit naive.
All right. So what happens next? We stand back and let ISIS do their work. Then what?
Yeah.
Now, isn't that a terrorist government by definition?
It is. And so that can't be the answer either.
Then why don't we nip it in the bud right now? You're contradicting yourself.
I am. I mean, I think it's a very thickety. Is thickety a word? I mean, I don't think there is a very easy answer. And so it drives me crazy when people give these simplistic, well, let's go do this and let's go do that, because nobody ever thinks about what comes next.
We need a million drones with a million teenage boys that will stay up for days flying these drones and shooting ISIS.
Well, you know, that would work for a decade or so, and then everybody else in the world would have a billion drones with a billion teenage boys sending them at us. I mean, that worries me a lot. I mean, that's a whole different topic.
China's got some incredible number of drones already.
Oh, I have no doubt. And for us to think that this is, you know, some kind of sterile, harmless war where we can take out all the bad guys and, you know, have completely clean hands and never have this come back on us, that seems naive to me as well. And, you know, all I'm trying to say here is that it's a very complex and a very difficult problem. No, I'm not saying we stand back and do nothing. I don't know what we should do. I really don't. I think we have to get rid of Assad in Syria. But
why?
Well,
we get rid of leaders and bad things happen. Worse things happen, according to you. Look at freaking Egypt.
You're right.
Look at
you're absolutely right.
Yeah, look at you know, Syria. What's happening in Syria now? Nothing has really been gained. Look at Iraq. Look at Libya. Yeah. Libya is like a textbook example of a strong man who had control of his country.
Yes, it was.
Not a good person.
Yes, it was.
He comes in and during the Arab Spring and gets wiped out, and then now
with our help.
Yeah.
Because they said, we're going to Benghazi and we're going to go door to door and slaughter people. That's what he said. And so in response to that, the United States went in and took out that leader. And you're right. That, in hindsight, appears to have been a mistake.
It is now a country that is run by rebels, and they've got billions of dollars coming into the oil industry. And it's an absolute nightmare, and it's the same things happen in Iraq.
That's exactly right. And so what do we do about it? I don't know. What do you think we should do about it?
Just go in and defend the Christians. If we're not going to fight a war over land with these people, at least protect these Yazidis and Christians and help them. Let's do humanitarian missions in which we go in and take these people and move them to safety.
I've got no issue with that, but that is obviously not solving the problem. That's solving one small area
and then
of the problem.
According
but
to
maybe
you,
that's all we can do.
According to you, it is millennia that these Muslims
That's not according to me.
Well, I'm responding to your argument.
Oh, right.
There's an argument you're making to say, let them fight their own inter-Nicene war, their own inter-religious war.
That's pretty much what I'm saying. That's correct.
All right. We finally agreed on something.
A little roundabout way of getting there.
Talking with Walt Rubel, Kelly O'Connell, 729, and we will be back. Take a little break here. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, and it is 729. We'll be right back. Kelly and got Walt Rubel here. Now, Walt, I specifically wanted to ask you about, we are a Christian nation. Do we have a duty / a right to go and defend Christians, or do you think that is mixing church and state?
No, I think it's mixing church and state. I think we have, because we are unquestionably the strongest, most powerful nation in the world, we have some duty. And where that is, I don't know. But I don't think we could be entirely isolationist. I don't think we can look at, say what happened in Rwanda 20 years ago and just throw our hands up and say, somebody else's problems. There is a fine line there, and exactly where it is, I don't know. But I don't think the religion of the victims is the thing that makes the decision about do we go in.
What if they were devil worshippers, a Sammy Davis tribe?
you got to save them anyway. If they are, you have to treat them the same, I guess, is what I'm saying. I think when we look at our vital interests as a nation, unfortunately, we look at commerce, and that's what we base our vital interests on.
I heard something that I'm sure you will totally disagree with out of hand, but I've heard that it is the Christians in the Middle East that keep it running, for whatever reason, involved in commerce, involved in government. And if you pulled those people out, there would be a collapse. And I'd have to, I just heard that, and I didn't even kind of follow it up because I didn't know how to, but I thought it was kind of an interesting point. So you actually agree with the president's response to this?
I don't know if I – no. I mean, there are a lot of things he did. The most obvious one was painting the red line in Syria and then not following that up. So there are a lot of areas along the way where I think he made mistakes. We talked about Benghazi. I think that was a mistake. I mean, so, no. But at the same time, I think he is – doing the best he can with a very difficult situation, and in comparison to his Republican predecessor, I like his approach better. I think you can make the argument that Obama has been too weak, and maybe he has, but I think you can also make the argument that George Bush and the neocons rushed in too quickly.
It really, when you hear George Bush invoked,
mm-hmm.
you're a member.
I'm not hearing it. I mean, invoking him. I'm doing it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So obviously, when you hear yourself invoking George Bush, does it give you a frisson? Does it give you a kind of a little charge? You're on the left, and is it appropriate to say that you're on the left?
I don't look at myself as you're, being
you're moderate.
Way.
You see yourself as a moderate.
Yeah, that's how
okay.
I see myself. But certainly center left.
Center left. Okay. Okay. So when you hear George Bush, his name invoked, or you hear yourself invoking
yeah.
it to explain all of the problems in the Middle East, does that resonate?
I think that you have. I think that no president inherits a blank slate, and so when you look at what.
If John Locke was a president, he would have inherited a blank slate. But that's a joke about John
yeah.
Locke believed everybody was born without any information. But anyway,
well, so the point is, Obama inherited an economy that was in ruins, and he inherited
ruins.
We were shedding
ruins, like so we had been bombed back to the Stone Age.
Okay.
Or what?
He inherited an economy that was doing very poorly.
All right, struggling a little bit.
That was shedding jobs like an Alaskan husky sheds fur in Las Cruces in the summertime, and he inherited a world situation that was not helped by the Iraq War,
all right.
in my opinion.
All right,
and so you can't dismiss those things when you say. How has he responded to the mess that was given to him? You can't ignore the mess that was given to him. That's all I'm saying.
But is it an answer to what's happening now 6 or 7 years later? I mean,
not a full answer.
How did Arab Spring help the world?
I'm not sure that it did. And I'm not sure that wasn't a big mistake. You know, that's. You know, so if you're saying, am I fully supportive of everything that the president has done in foreign policy? No, I'm not. But I do think he has taken overall a more restrained approach that I am supportive of.
Militarily.
Militarily.
All
that's
right.
And he has done so with Congress completely on the sidelines, with Congress completely throwing their hands up and saying, you know, if you want to negotiate a peace deal, we have to be involved in that. But if you want to go to war, hey, have at it. I mean, that has been their attitude from the very start. And so he has had to make individual choices that not all of them have worked out very well. But his overall philosophy, I would say that I agree with.
Hasn't he chosen to go it alone? Hasn't he refused the legislative process?
Oh, yeah.
Hasn't he turned his back? I mean, you act like that he was given no choice but to be a solo operator.
Yeah, when you said go it alone, I thought you meant other countries. He's been horrible in terms of his negotiations with Congress. Absolutely terrible.
He's not a good negotiator across the board. It would seem to me he doesn't really understand, or he rejects the elements of.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think that's his strong suit.
I'd like to play him in poker.
I don't know. I mean, he may be better than you think.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know.
All right. Talking to Walt Rubel, 739, talking about a little bit about the Middle East. And I would say that if the president was a Christian,
yeah,
president, yeah.
So you don't take him at his word when he says that he is.
What if he doesn't understand what a Christian, what the term means?
Well, I think everybody has their own definition, don't they?
So there is no Christianity except as each person defines it.
Well, don't you think that's kind of right?
I think it's totally ridiculous. I mean,
but don't you think every person gets to decide for themselves what they are?
Well, you're kind of looking at it from a psychological slash sociological vantage point, which
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do I have to believe every tenet of the religion in order to be a member? Do I have, if I want to consider myself to be a Catholic?
That's a good question.
Is it okay if I eat meat on Friday? And that may have been changed, but say it wasn't, you know, 10 years ago.
No, I got you. My answer to that would be there has to be some sort of core belief.
Sure.
You can't, since nobody's perfect, nobody would probably have the capacity to understand and believe every single element of the Bible.
So you're saying you don't think the president has core beliefs. You think he's just making that up.
Like I said on the show earlier, I don't know what he believes, but based on his statements and actions, it seems to me that he doesn't have motivating him. My observation is he doesn't seem to be motivated by Christianity. For one thing, he doesn't go to church. Now, there's a reason for that. He doesn't. Well, we got a phone call here. Okay. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, I was listening to your conversation there about, Christianity. And, if you're a Christian, you believe in the Bible. And like Walt said, people are going to pick and choose. There's cliches, cafeteria Catholics and Protestants that don't do this or that. But, the Bible tells us that man will change as time goes on. And we've seen it. But the Bible doesn't. And God doesn't change. He's not looking for a public opinion poll. I think that the core canon of Christianity doesn't change. While different people may come up with ideas. That's their own thing, and it's up to the Lord to determine.
All right, Aaron,
if we've strayed too far from it.
Aaron, what do you think? Like in a nutshell, what does it mean to be a Christian? Like so that we could apply it to Obama.
Well, of course, the very first thing is you got to love your neighbor. You got to love your fellow man.
Can't you love your neighbor?
That's the main tenet.
Yeah, can't you love your neighbor if you're a Hindu?
Yes, you can. There are other religions also profess love. Christianity doesn't have the corner on love. But I think
what is essential? What is Aaron? Break it down to what is quintessential that you couldn't be a Christian unless you believe this thing, and then we can apply it to the president.
Well, I don't know that we can say the president's not a Christian. At his core, Can any of us read another man's heart?
Yeah, but I mean that was my whole point to say that previously. Okay, so the Bible says not to judge people on the one hand. On the other hand, it says to know them by their fruit. So, within the Bible's own logic, can you make an argument that this president has the fruit of a Christian, for example?
Well, that's debatable, and the Bible also says, "Judge not, lest ye be judged."
Well,
but,
I kind of already stated that, but right, Aaron, it seems like you're kind of caught in a existential maelstrom here. Let me put you on hold. I got to take a break, and we'll come back and get a nutshell from you, okay?
Okay.
Thanks. All right, folks. It's not easy. It ain't easy being on live radio, especially summing up the essence of Christianity.
The question of life type of...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, we'll be right back. Talking to Walt Rubel, who is, as usual, stirred up a little bit of a storm here. Be right back. It is 743 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell,
523-1450.
Oh,
there you go. Yeah, that's nice.
What's that?
That's nice.
What?
Music.
Yeah, very comforting. Yeah, I think that's good. I mean,
it's very, like I said, those are what's the meaning of life type questions.
There must be some practical definition of what it means to be a Christian, even for the theological sense. There's got to be some
Yeah, I mean, the obvious answer is the acceptance of Jesus Christ as the Savior.
Yeah.
But, then what does that mean? How does that inform everything that you do from then on?
I was surprised.
Yeah, love your neighbor. Kind of goes back to what we talked about last week.
Which was what?
Oh, Mr. Rogers.
I had somebody tell me, I'd love to meet Mr. Rogers. These are good debates. I think it's good to talk about this because so many people in their minds see
themselves as Christians, but they don't necessarily talk about it until you're a minister. Well, I think that's absolutely true. So what's the last concert you went to?
Would have been here. Oh, Charlie Daniels, I guess.
How's that?
He's good.
Now it's a guy. Huh?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, even, he's probably, in his 70s now? And he, play two or three songs and he had to take a break. But, that's fine. Come back out, play two or three others, take a break. He had a great band, so, not a problem.
Yeah, the last big one that I traveled out of town before was Tom Petty. I just don't know that. He just got so expensive.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Don Felder,
who's the guitarist for the Eagles? He's the guy who taught Tom Petty.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's Kelly here, and we were waiting to hear what Aaron's definition of Christian was, and now at the last second he dropped out. Hopefully he wasn't driving and pulled over for being on the phone.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't be good.
But, all right, so what is this definition of Christianity that you could apply to the president without judging him?
Yeah.
Look at his fruit, as the Bible says, and does he have the fruit of a Christian? I don't know. I mean, it seems to me he doesn't go to church. He doesn't seem to talk about the Bible with any sense of, real relish.
Right.
And...
See, I don't know if I agree with that.
All right. So he seems to talk about Islam with more enthusiasm than Christianity. It seems to me.
I know I don't agree with that.
All right. Okay.
I hear him talk about the Bible not frequently. You're right. He is not somebody. He is not Rick Santorum.
Mm-hmm.
He is not somebody who this is his North Star. This is, his guiding principle for every decision he makes. Mm-hmm. He's not. I don't think he's ever claimed to be. But that doesn't mean he's not a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my question. What it really bothers me that people on the right say that he's a Muslim, and the reason that bothers me is because they use that term as a pejorative. That if he were a Muslim,
that
would be a horrible thing. It would disqualify him from being a president.
Let me ask you this, Walt. Are all religions the same?
No.
Do they have this
no.
essence? Okay.
No.
But it is not a bad thing to be a Muslim.
That's what I'm saying.
So are all the great religions the same?
Ooh.
I mean, what are you basing? You say it wouldn't be a bad thing if he were a Muslim. What do you base that on?
Well, the same. Well, I base that on I don't think it would be a bad thing if he were a Hindu. I don't think it would be a bad thing if he were Jewish.
So you're embracing the great religions.
I guess I am. Now, and that's probably because of an ignorance of religions that wouldn't be considered as great.
Well, and we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. It's Aaron. I got cut off. I'm sorry.
So it's no problem. Have you distilled your beliefs down to a brief tract or a paragraph?
Well, I think maybe
please?
Not. I think that Obama is trying to split hairs and he's trying to play the game that, all religions are equal.
All right.
And I don't believe they are. I'm sorry. I think Islam is showing its weaknesses in that it is got this vein or this strain of such violent belief that I don't see that they'll ever be able to extract it from their religion because it's written in the Quran.
All right. So, Aaron, this violence is not a virus that Islam picked up along the way. It is in the core. It is in the DNA.
Yes, it is in the DNA. It is in there. It's in there, strung in there throughout. "Quote unquote" moderate Muslims can't ignore it and be peaceful. But I think at any time, if they want to go find it, it's there in their writings, and it's there to justify what they might want to do. And, we've seen a guy on TV from London, the imam or whatever, who's calling for the death of the woman in Texas.
Yeah.
and we're seeing it all over the world. We're seeing this thread of it.
All right, so hold on a second, Walt. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess all I would say is when you say that they are irredeemable, I disagree with that. I think Christianity.
I didn't say irredeemable. I didn't say irredeemable.
Well, that's what
having redemption. I don't know that Islam does have redemption, does it?
Well, that's. I'm not talking about irredeemable in maybe the same sense as you are. What you are saying is that it's hopeless for them, that they will never pull out of this. And I guess all I would say is that Christianity went through its own bloody period as well. Now, it was centuries ago. I understand that. And I would also
it was in a sense an internal struggle.
Okay,
can I finish? Catholics persecuting other Christians.
Can I finish?
Sure.
I would also say that you can pick and choose things in the Quran to justify all kinds of horrible acts, just like you can pick and choose things in the Bible to justify all kinds of horrible acts. You can also find all kinds of things in the Quran promoting peace and love and harmony, and just like you can find that in the Bible. So to say that they can never change because they have passages in the Quran that can always be used to justify violence, I would only argue that you can make that same argument for Christianity.
No, because the Reformation came and Jesus Christ came and threw away the Torah and said the old is done. The new way is through Christ. And he got rid of the old ways of stoning for this and stoning for that. He told the guys, if you have no sin, cast the first stone, and they all walked away. We don't have that right now in Islam. There is no reformational, transformational period or event that's taken place. So if you're trying to equate, the Old Testament said to do this and to do that, well, that was all rendered gone when Christ came. That's what the whole gospel is about. So you can't put the two on the same footing unless the Quran has this kind of a moment. Then they're always going to be able to go into their book, and this is the current status right now. This is it.
Aaron, I got to go because we're out of time, and I've got a few more ads, but let's pick this up tomorrow if you're enthusiastic about it still. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Folks, so we'll be right back.
There's nothing wrong with you.
All right, so I'm here with Walt. We're almost out of time. Here's the argument that I think that would be out there in the mind of a Christian that Obama's not a Christian is, number one, he went to this church that seemed to be racist and Marxist.
Jeremiah Wright.
Yeah, and he never repudiated it. Number two.
But that was a Christian church.
Can I just make my...
I'm sorry. Yeah, of course you can. And
all right, well, I forgot that I had the judge of what is a Christian versus not a Christian church sitting in the studio, and he cannot resist. But... number one, this is the argument.
Yeah,
I'm not even saying it's my argument, so don't get exercised here. Number one, that he went to this church that was both apparently racist and more Marxist and racist than the Bible would qualify. Number one, number two, he never repudiated that. Number three, he doesn't go to church now. Number four, when he talks about religion, the religion he appears to be the most interested in with is Islam, and he spoke about how beautiful the Adnan was in the morning. He doesn't really appear to be interested or overly worried about Christians being killed in the Middle East. He's done a number of things in public that seem to be lies, like he's selling his public policy by lies, that type of thing. All right, what's your response?
Okay, well, first
we got about 1 minute.
Yeah, I know. Of course he repudiated the Jeremiah Wright speech. That was his whole speech in Cleveland was a repudiation of Jeremiah Wright. So of course he did. But beyond that, as we talked about off the air, I do think that the president, when he took office, saw part of his role as repairing relations in the Arab world. And maybe in the minds of some over here, he went too far. He was overzealous in doing that. But I think he saw tremendous damage was done to the United States reputation by the George Bush presidency. And when he got in there, he wanted to let people know that there was a new sheriff in town.
All right,
a new
but what does that
charge.
Have to do with Christianity and his beliefs?
I don't think it has anything to do with it. I think you're conflating that. I don't think the fact that he says the sound of the chant called a prayer is a beautiful thing. I don't think that's a repudiation of Christianity. I think that's just an observation and being polite to your hosts.
Okay, but where is his enthusiasm for Christianity? Where does it come out?
I would say that if you go to the prayer breakfast, if you listen to his words, the enthusiasm, is he a fire and brimstone kind of? No, that's not him. He doesn't have that level. And so if you're saying unless he has that level, he's not a Christian,